Okay, it is our weekly Tacky Talk time with State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy. Tacky, how are you?
Doing great, Joe. It's a beautiful Wednesday morning, and it's a little nippier, but it's good to see you as always.
Yeah, likewise. I love these updates, and we should, I guess, start with acknowledging since last we chatted, former Mayor Frank McCauley has passed away.
No, that's very sad. His wife, Sandra, passed away in the midst of COVID. My understanding is that she had COVID, and sadly, Frank also as well. Those who are in Quincy politics, but especially in House Neck, know that Frank and Sandra are a fixture community, even after Frank finished his public life in office. Still very committed to his community in the House Neck Community Council. He was with all the still local business organizations. And people remember Frank was a daily walker. He walked miles upon miles upon miles. And it's one of the reasons why Frank lived to the age of 91 is continuing a large amount of physical activity, not just mentally, but also physically.
Absolutely. I couldn't help but think, when he started his walking routine, how much he mimicked President Adams. You know, he was known for walking this entire city.
Oh, absolutely. He's also one of those people that actually knocked on my door during campaign, which if people know where I live, because my front yard's at Blacks Creek Marsh, there ain't a lot of voters in terms of like voter density efficiency.
Yeah.
Door knocking. It's not very good spot.
Yeah.
Where I live, not just because of lack of voters, but it's a small street. And we have a multi-story housing, a multi-unit housing more accurately. We have around me four unit housing. Which there's no way to knock the doors. So, those who campaign know that if you live in a place where, it's four or more units, there's nothing you do. You just drop your literature against the mailbox slots.
Yeah.
In the mailbox, that's illegal. It's like stick it around it, and then you move along, and that's all you can do. So, Frank is one of those few folks that actually visited me during the campaign season.
Yeah. Our condolences to his family, certainly. And you mentioned House Neck. Just a reminder, if folks want to make a donation in his memory, he requested the House Neck Community Council Scholarship Fund. So even in death, still thinking of his community.
Oh, absolutely. And those who know, Frank is a very big Republican and led the Republican Party for Quincy for many years. Obviously, I'm not a Republican, I'm a Democrat, but at the same time, Frank's has always been very kind on giving me lots of good advice on the pedestrian politics and reminding me of where things used to be, so to speak. So I got caught up with my House Neck history, but he was also a BC High kid. And there's that special tie with the Catholic school, as well as the BC High alumni, and always wanted to succeed. And I always say this about Frank, one of those guys that always wanted me to do well in this business. Every time I saw him, he always wanted me to do well. He wants me to succeed. And, that's something that's kind of lost in today's politics, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think you're right. And that leads us into a discussion about what's happening in Tacky World on Beacon Hill these days.
Well, Tacky World is having a very quiet week, thankfully, after trying to get through the ARPA and the state surplus last week, which you talked about a little bit, but we didn't get a lot of details yet. And the Senate is actually engaging in debate right now. They're doing something we haven't seen in some time, is no deadline for amendments in the Senate, meaning you can file amendments on the floor as you go along. It's not new, folks. I mean, it's a practice that's been done in the state house for many, many, many decades. But in the last 20 plus or so years, we've adopted deadlines for amendments for the purpose of orderly filing. There's some advantages to it. It gives the staff and Ways and Means and leadership time to review amendments. So when we get to debate, it becomes more efficient. On the flip side, the ability to do amendments on the fly is that once amendments are in and deadlines close and something new comes up, you can't just go on the fly and try to do something. So there's always a benefit and disbenefit associated with everything we do in life.
Yeah.
I do recognize that. So, last week, we were able to get, the delegation was able to get, very good amount of funding. The general components provided millions, hundreds of million dollars for things like public housing, water, environmental waterways and other environmental land improvements, money for windmills and so forth. However, locally, the delegation was able to get $400,000 to put towards the ferry service in Squinton Point Park, which John and Bruce, you know, Rep. Senator Keenan, Rep. Ayers has been supporting it. I've got a bit of money, $600,000 for dredging Quincy Bay, which the three of us have been also working on, and some money for Quincy Community Action Programs for improving their food pantry, as you know, food security has been a challenge, and you know, some money for Quincy Asian Resources for a mobile food pantry. Not necessarily a new idea, but something we actually do not have on the South Shore. So, you know, we put some startup or one-time capital monies out there, and during, you know, obviously the ferry and the beach dredging is a big capital project. So we're looking to kind of piecemeal that as we go along. And again, this becomes the federal funding, right? The Congress voted on a massive infrastructure package bill. The projections are that we're going to see somewhere maybe up to $12 billion coming to Massachusetts. We do have another $2 billion in cash infrastructure money sitting in the trust fund that we've not spent yet, because we want to see how much infrastructure money we can get first from the federal government on the bigger piece, and how much flexibility we have. So, you know, we have a lot of flexibility in that $12 billion. You know, obviously we're going to be focusing on pending projects that need to be funded, but also our local projects as well, which the administration may not prioritize, but obviously your delegation absolutely does prioritize, because we live close to you all. And we use the same roads you do. So, we're going to try to see how much more money we can get back directly to the city to spend, or direct the state to spend money on a city and, you know, city state partnership projects.
Yeah. Can some of that money be used to save the MBTA?
Possibly. That's actually a big question mark, because you've heard Boston wants free MBTA. Well, as the governor correctly points out, there's no free lunch. So we'll see how that unfolds, because they got some ARPA money to address a pre-2018 budget losses.
Okay.
And I say that very importantly for everybody, because your budget from 2018 to 2019 to 2020, 2021 is not the same size budget.
Right.
Because of the revenue changes, but also the cost of doing business goes up. The actual fuel prices have gone up. That also affects the MBTA. We've all seen gas go to $3.29, and it's been fluctuating between like $3.20 and up to $3.40 or $3.45. And if you're in Boston, up to like $3.50 or 60 cents, depending what station you're at. So, you know, the MBTA is not shielded from those price spikes as well. Mm-hmm. So as a result, you know, the cost of doing business of tea also shifts. And the question really becomes is how much money do the feds give us down to DC to provide support for DT is the budget. So the Fed money that we got looked at the 18 budget.
Okay.
So the gap. A lot of changes happen over time.
Certainly, yeah. So, but basically it would be funding, ridership that doesn't exist anymore.
And cost of business going up. Just because you don't have ridership doesn't mean the cost changes with DT, because they have to maintain same level of service, whether there's anyone on the bus or on the train.
Okay, stay tuned for that one. Doesn't look like the State House is going to be reopening anytime soon, Tacky.
Yeah, Ron, as part of the leadership meeting, had taking questions on this, and the good speaker eloquently pointed out again that this is not a standard public building. And I've gotten some arguments from other folks about this as well, because I don't know who comes in and says hi to me. I'm not kidding about that. People have this bizarre idea that the building is by appointment only, that, you know, it's limited access to the public. No, it's a museum, it's a working office, it's a fully functional chamber of the legislature. It's one of the few buildings of this age, over 200 years old, that's still a fully functional building. It's essentially a museum, and it's also a fully functioning legislative body. And, I was in the office to collect a laptop, which I finally have a new device, which I'm working on with you right now. And once again, I notice how the air doesn't move in my office. It's completely stagnated. I do not have an HVAC system. So as you've seen in the news, compliance on vaccination rate is well closing in 100%, or at least vaccination status to accommodate for people who cannot get vaccinated because of medical or religious reasons. And the House is going to accommodate those folks. There is a commitment from the Speaker to make sure that happens. But also there's a couple of members who won't disclose. No, just because you didn't disclose doesn't mean you're not vaccinated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we're not telling anybody who isn't vaccinated, because there's all kinds of laws regarding disclosure of medical condition.
Right.
However, we can ask you about that. We can't disclose it regarding your vaccination status. Okay. So all we're asking for was for people to tell us if you're vaccinated or not.
Okay, do they have to prove it, or it's just word of mouth?
Oh no, we have a vaccination card. You have to get a PDF or picture sent up to the HR department, and then if you have a doctor's note, or you can sign an affidavit on your religious belief. You know, an affidavit, you know, it's serious. I mean, you don't sign these things whimsically. You know? That, you know, the house will try to provide accommodations for you.
Okay.
And, you know, not to get too deep into it, but I'm fully aware that there are several members, as well as staff, with serious, serious, serious medical conditions.
Sure.
And they're very, very, very concerned about COVID coming to the office, especially it's asymptomatic, especially with Delta, and desire to continue wearing masks and increase sanitation because they're extremely immunocompromised. And they like to continue their job. And prior to COVID, you know, we're able to provide some assistance for people who are elected, who have severe illnesses, and try to do our best to make sure they continue to do their job at the State House, as well as provide their constituent services. So we're very cognizant to help any elected and their staff to the job, the best ability to ensure the constituents get the best representation.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Stay tuned for that then. It needs to be equitable. I'm sure that's on the speaker's mind for everyone.
Yeah. We can't do it like some people.
Right.
Not all people. It's all people.
Right.
And so, you know, I've seen tourists coming back to Beacon Hill. I mean, it's smaller, but you see the tour groups and the State House is part of Freedom Trail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, students, tourists, random people. I get people coming into my office who want to advocate for and against whatever. No idea who you are. The staff meets them up front. If I got time, I'll come out and meet them as well if I'm not trapped in a meeting or trapped in the chamber. And the people will grab you in the hallway. I mean, how did many of you listening to the call get stopped by strangers at work? You don't know who they are, up close into your face saying, hey, you know, I want this, or I don't like this, or I love you, or I hate your guts. It's not like other workplaces, folks. Literally, strangers will grab you by the arm. Well, maybe not by the arm. Well, some have. Okay.
Well, because they know who you are. You know, you might know not know who they are, but they know who you are.
Exactly. They got a little picture book and they're coming for you. So I think people don't fully appreciate that access. It's not like Congress. Congress actually has the ability to control who gets in there, who gets in to see the reps and senators. There's no barrier between me and the public. And
right.
It shocks other state legislators who visit our building as tourists how little barrier there is between me and the public.
Yeah. Legislatively, what is on your docket right now, Techie?
Right now, actually, I just had a staff meeting regarding my committee stuff as we're trying to organize ourselves into window time. And at some point, the staff and I actually have to sit down in person and go through paper, like literally just sit through paper.
Yeah.
Trying to make arrangements for that now for us to safely get together at some point. We're vaccinated, but we're still overly cautious, obviously, and also prepare documents for my co-chair, Sue Moran, to reveal. And a joint review is coming up on the deadline on the 2nd of February. So we'd like to get our ducks in order, at least going to the holidays, on what we're going to recommend to my co-chair. And let's be honest, realistically, how much time we have with staff and capacity to get how much done. Some stuff is not going to get done. And we're right now trying to prioritize what can we do have time to do work on and what we don't. And then we're preparing a list for leadership on committee, as well as going to have to prepare a report for the speaker soon to update them on the committee on pending things and future things. On a personal issue of my own legislation, not a lot's happening with anything right now because we're still having public hearings and I've got no executive sessions on my bills that are filed with other committees. So I'm still waiting for action on all of them. And
okay.
I'll have some action, then I'll take the next step on what I need to do next to moving forward.
Okay. Sports betting still being discussed or is that finalized now?
Senate is still working on it. Okay. Go talk to Tom. We have always suspected that the Senate would be a tougher haul on sports betting, and their history on expanded gambling has been very poor. They've not been very supportive of expanded gambling for many years, except for online lottery, which I find very perplexing. They like expanding online lottery, but they do not want to expand gambling. I'd not be able to reconcile this in my head. But getting a consensus vote, not to just minority, but to override number, I think is very important. But for the Senate president, because if you get to override number, we control the policy, not the governor.
Ah, okay.
But if he only gets to just a raw majority, the governor's veto power actually holds. And, you know, I don't have much more than that. I mean, I'm conversations are continuing, and multiple parties are very involved in the conversation.
Okay. Interested, too, and I should talk to the speaker about this, but a bill he filed regarding healthcare and in particular hospital mergers. I'm curious what the future of that holds, actually.
We're currently in a holding pattern right now and coming into session. The speaker's office have indicated pretty much every single day the possibility of a formal session being held.
Okay.
We are juggling our schedules around the possibility of formal session. So, you know, literally we went up to like, you know, if we get it, like for example, the informal session today, if they announce a formal session on Friday, I have to drop the whole Friday schedule.
Gotcha. Okay.
It's kind of one of the tricky parts of our business that you have to really drop everything in favor of a session, you know, or just move everything around. So we're in call until right to the 17th. There is some speculation going around the building about a healthcare bill coming out of the House. We know that the Senate is working on a mental health piece. I'm very concerned, very interested about community hospitals and community health centers. I do not know exactly what's on the calendar, but that's kind of the talk around the building.
Okay. All right.
All text messaging.
Right. That's the talk, right? Is texting in this new age.
No, to it knows, but you know,
yeah, exactly.
Rumors still continue despite not being in the building.
Exciting news locally, of course, you're well aware, groundbreaking for the new housing resource center here in Quincy to replace Father Bill's. A lot of that is thanks to state funding.
Yes. You know, we had a press conference last, was it spring?
Yep.
Yeah, it was spring. Yeah, because I think it was one of my first few appearances. It was an outdoor event to speak with the speaker and the delegation and the governor, where we all were marked. We had marks on the floor, keeping us well 6 feet apart from each other and masked. You know, it's great that the city was able to work with Father Bills on putting a space across the street from where they currently are on Broad Street, as well as providing state's funding to help jumpstart this program, and also looking to do real single service support, one-stop shopping support. I think people need to move away from the idea that you provide some places a shelter resolves all their problems. And you still need to get a job. You still need to break that stigmatization that people have about homeless people. And some of these folks come from bad situations, which they're trying to move forward in their life. And some people find themselves by happenstance. Things happen, and here you are. But, you know, I think it's very important to break that stigma associated with it, you know, get people the proper help, but also help people move forward. And having a food resource center is something that I fully support. And, you know, we really should advocate more at my level of government, as well as the federal level, to fund these type of programs where, since you have people who need homes and people who need to get jobs and people who need to move to the modern world. I mean, we have people who are former prisoners. You know, people are serve their time with the Commonwealth. But I mean, it's a different world where you come out. And you got to be able to adjust to the world we live in. And those transitional services, so to speak, or these services to update your modern life, essentially, is very important. And, you know, Father Bill's getting a food resource center to provide greater degree of services on a broad range of issues will more rapidly transition folks out of homelessness into the workforce and move on with their lives. And as I tell people, you know, as a guy, human service guy, I tell folks, I mean, my goal is to get you out of here and never see you again.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, that's what that was Father Bill's goal way back in the 80s was take the sign down. he didn't want to have a shelter. He knew the solution was permanent housing.
Yeah, and Frank McCauley, Frank was actually very supportive of the homeless shelter and Father Bill's.
Yeah.
The program up. So, you know, Frank McCauley as the mayor is a part of that legacy of Father Bills. And this next step is a crucial step in, you know, moving people off government services and, you know, into the workforce.
Sure. Absolutely. Veterans Day Techie is here. And I know that that has a deep meaning in your heart.
Yes, I, you know, thank you to all the veterans and the veterans' families. Today, you know, tomorrow is definitely going to be a day we separate veterans and the families who are with us to under work, keeping our freedoms to us, as well as, you know, people just living their lives. You know, people don't realize this, but, you know, veterans are crucial in the war in the Pacific during World War II and other countries in Asia, because it provided an opportunity to create stability in the region during, especially during the Cold War. And sometimes, unfortunately, questionable stability in places like Vietnam and just seen in Afghanistan most recently. But also improve people's quality of life. And, but it's the thanks to the veterans that make that happen, not just domestically, but also overseas. And, I tell folks, if not for veterans, a lot of immigrants would have come to this country because of the circumstances of war where they were in the U.S. Providing a peaceful stability for many decades during the Cold War and, after the Cold War now. And I'm not blind to the fact that, not 100% success rate, as U.S. foreign policy. I'm not blind to that. I do understand that. But, it is thanks to the veterans. And even now, veterans are trying to help Afghan refugees escape. Veterans are still not just working for us at home, but other people around the world they work with and care a lot about. So, thank you. To veterans and their families, know that they have an impact, on a global level.
Yeah, that's what Veterans Day is all about, just basically saying thank you. Do you know, is the state involved at all in the probes into the VA homes, like in Chelsea and Holyoke?
Yeah, the Joint Committee on Veterans Affairs had formed a special committee during whole COVID about the Holyoke Soldiers Home. In particular, and the Committee of Veterans Affairs continues to be looking into the matter.
Okay,
we provided some funding for upgrades this past year. I think we did it back in the spring. Directly specifically address the soldiers' home in Holyoke in response to the report. This saga isn't over yet. Holyoke, as the committee continues investigations, more information will arise about what was really going on here. And those who've not read the Globe Spotlight on this, it was very enlightening about the administration's failures and the need to scapegoat something that was a systemic problem for a long, long, long time.
Yeah, it was unfortunate that it took that tragedy to uncover it, but hopefully some good will come out of that.
No, I agree. Veterans and veterans' families deserve much better than what happened there. And I will say the state did turn a blind eye to that. And the administration of the governor and prior governors, allowed this to continue to happen, made it difficult for the legislature and the public to see what's really going on.
Sure. Want to comment at all on the new administration in Boston, Tacky? We haven't talked about that, really.
Well, the transition team was put in place recently. I got the email because I'm on everybody's campaign email nature. One of the sad natures of politics. When I get out of this, I'm unsubscribing all of you. I do not, as you most knows, I do not torture you with emails for money.
No, not at all. You don't. Yeah.
I don't do that. Maybe I will someday, but not near term. The transition team, I will admit, I do not recognize most of the names. Obviously, Jay Gonzalez pops out. He's a former A&F secretary for Donald Patrick, and he ran for governor last time out, but most of the names don't pop out at me. And, the mayor of Boston, right off the bat, had to deal with a lot of stuff. You have a COVID shutdown of a school in JP, 46 infections. Again, the importance of vaccination and masking continues to be essential. Most recently, they had the classroom attend in the class itself to shut it down. She had, unfortunately, an officer shot. My thoughts are you to your family about that as well. Crime is on the rise in Boston this past year. She has to address that very quickly. I sadly think this is not going to slow down. Developers in Boston, I've heard from some folks, their friend or a friend kind of conversation. Mm-hmm. There's some concern about whether, these projects that Kim Janey stopped, are they going to be restarted? Mm-hmm. These are jobs. These are jobs for people as well. In the concept of free MBTA, as you saw I mentioned this a little earlier, saw in State House News Service, the governor and the leadership team is, being very skeptical about providing free tea. And of course, as a tea community, why should Boston get something that we're not getting? And why should we be paying for their policies? This is a state issue, not a city issue. So, this actually is a longer conversation than I have right now. I mean, it's funding is actually pretty complex.
Yeah.
But I very committed to make sure that we get our resources and not subsidize the city of Boston because of a mayor's desire. So I mean, let you all know I'm not warm to this idea. It only hurts us. So I mean, Mayor Boston, has a little time. Her swearing in is coming up really quickly, and she needs to put in a new staff. Kim Janey's people have moved on. Marty Walsh's people have moved on, and she's got to get her Michelle Wu team on board fast. And she only has an acting police commissioner, right? They still have the police commissioner controversy hasn't gone. You have a Boston superintendent of schools who couldn't get her licensing properly done, much less assistant superintendent also getting her licensing properly done, according to the Globe Spotlight, right? You have Mass and Cass, which they cleaned out the area, but did that really solve the long-term problems of homelessness, as we talked about with the bills, which is the model they should adopt, as well as substance abuse, mental health, and also people about standing warrants and how you handle that. And of course, you got to do your neighboring communities as well, in Cambridge, Boston, Chelsea, Revere, Winthrop, and Milton, and so many others, Dedham borders, and so many others. And also dealing internally within their own city about, these programs and how it impacts different parts. So, for example, like Quincy, Boston is a very neighborhood-driven city. We do something for West Roxbury or Roxbury or Dorchester, Rosendale. What about Southie, Charlestown, and Eastie and the West End? I mean, it's a big city. Every neighborhood's different. Everyone that's called from Quincy understands all neighborhoods are different.
Right.
How do you balance those neighborhood interests as you're describing a program for one part of the city? Well, why can't have the other part of the city have the same program? Same issue I have as a legislator.
Yeah.
One part of the state's a program. Why can't have the same program here?
Yeah, it makes you wonder why anybody would want to be an elected official, doesn't it?
I'm 10 years in, and I'm still kicking, and I'm having a good time. I'll tell you, like all jobs, some days are good, some days are bad, but I'm still here. But as I, hopefully through these very podcasts, and I fully admit some past podcasts is tacky, not sure what the answer is, and sometimes not always right, and as well as the fact that, COVID was a whole lot of mood swings with the two of us as we traveled together through this journey. As you guys, I hope you understand, it's a lot of balls in the air in government, whether it be a legislator or executive branch person. I'm going to try to keep track of all and some stuff I don't know about because there's so much else going on.
Sure. Well, I know you're one thing that always is constant, though, is you are accessible. So how do folks get a hold of you, Tacky?
Well, continue at 617-722-2014, 617-722-2014. Smash a button, get to a staffer, we'll get your voicemail. We'll figure it from there. You can email me at tacky.chan, tacky.chan@mahouse.gov. Again, I get a lot of email, and I do my best to try to get it sorted out, and you hear from myself and my staff. We're trying to help you out. We always prioritize people who have immediate needs. Again, now we've seen a small spike in unemployment issues again. As constituent calls, some new healthcare calls, and some small business calls now have also come in, making inquiries about certain government services and so forth. So, give me an idea what kind of prioritize I'm getting right now. State Representative Tacky Chan Facebook. You can watch me do public hearings, some events I've been at, and some important information that you may get off of there. And TackyChan.org, again, it's more like a phone book at this stage.
Right.
Phone numbers and social services, including QATV as being part of my web patrol of information you find things at.
Got to cut a little short this week, but appreciate the time as always, Tacky.